Morning, everyone. Welcome to show 91, live and not live if you're not listening to it live, of course, but from the Fendrian Cast team car. A Monday morning, we're hands free and happy. Well, hands free. It's been a pretty rough weekend in this part of the world weather-wise. I'm not sure. Anyone really enjoys the snow when you've got some cycling commitments. So hats off to anyone who did go out. I retired to the warmth of my conservatory and watched some TV as I pedalled along for an hour and a half or so. So boring, isn't it? So boring. I've tried Zwift, I've tried all of the ways to make riding your turbo a bit more interesting, but I'm yet to find one that really engages me with the process. I find if you completely hammer yourself doing intervals, that it does seem to take a little bit of the edge off the amount of time that you're spending in the saddle. you're not necessarily going to hammer yourself doing some of those intervals for, you know, 2-3 hours. What you might do if you're really good, not if you're me necessarily. Wasn't great. What I also found before we get properly stuck into the Tour Down Under was how the riders in the Tour Down Under were whinging about having warm, sunny, dry weather. Good guys, well done. We were only like 45 degrees centigrade behind you for most of the weekend. It was interesting to see them all strip off and jump into the sea at Victor Harbour at the end of that stage. I was jumping off my bike and running indoors to get warm. Slightly different set of criteria there, but I suppose I remember us discussing the extreme weather protocol last year when it affected one stage of the Tour Down Under, and I think the Tour of Dubai as well. I think all joking and mocking of the soft pros aside, it's quite a useful feature really, because is the race going to be that much of a spectacle in 40 degree plus heat? Probably not. Are the riders going to be able to perform? No. Is there a bit of health risk attached? Yes, there definitely is. I think it's probably not a bad thing to do. It's just from our perspective in the northern part of the northern hemisphere, it felt quite amusing to see them all piling off their bikes into the sea to cool down when we were battling the blizzards. So to speak, and there were proper blizzards. In fact, I think actually this winter, this is the third significant. This is the third amount of snowfall that we've had, which is the most that I can remember for many, many years. Okay, it's gone. This is a Monday morning. There's not that much left at all around the south area of Peterborough, but you know, it's long gone. But it's significant enough, and it'll be interesting to see as the season progresses, how much the long, steady-ish Sunday rides, I'm managing to get out about 1 in 4 at the moment, how much they're missed in terms of performance when the season gets going-ish. Kind of on that, there is a bit of a consternation, if you've not caught up with it, in the time trialling fraternity, not necessarily local, a bit further north, where there's a couple of fast courses which Highways England have tried to block cyclists from riding on. They're now looking at, not just on a motorway, they're looking at enforcing bans on certain stretches of dual carriageway, which happen to combine with a couple of the fast courses. I believe that the fast course where Bradley Wiggins rode that tried to go after comp record in a 10 the year before at Humberside Way, I think, is affected. And it will be interesting to see that the Facebook time trialling community is in meltdown, and people are apparently selling kit. And it's interesting, kind of talking to a number of people about how time trialling's gone, and people saying actually it's not really that much of a key element to the sport anymore, which is a shame, because most of Britain's cycling heritage is built up on the fact that we're a nation of time trialists. But the fact that routes are becoming more affected by street furniture. The roads are becoming more affected by street furniture and traffic and a whole host of other reasons that you know, that people aren't necessarily welcome on the roads, and cars and volume of cars, even on a Saturday afternoon or early on a Sunday morning. It's kind of almost back to driving the sport underground, and I just find it really interesting that the way that it's evolving. I'm not necessarily sure it's evolving in a good way, but it's evolving, and it will be interesting to see if other parts of the country look to try and put a block on racing on you know, like dual carriageways or fast A roads. I remember when I lived in Dorset, there was a reasonably fast course there at the top of the ridgeway out from between, kind of connecting Weymouth and over towards Poole. Pretty decent road, bit of dual carriageway at the start and finish, nice fast flat straight-ish A road in between, straight out to a roundabout, straight back. Just even being in Dorset, not much of a climb. You look at that and think now on a Saturday or a Sunday in the peak holiday months, while the time trialists are grateful of a bit of traffic to suck them along, will Dorset Council, for example, say, yeah, you know, that's, we don't want that on the road. We want to get the holidaymakers into the resorts and spending money rather than kind of, you know, maybe getting tangled up in a bike race. So interesting, but it'll be key to finding out. And you wonder whether once the precedent is set, we might see this happen a bit more often. I genuinely hope not, because, you know, I'm a fan of time trialing. The other element that people seem to, and I've had this mentioned to me a few times, is now that clubs are saying it's quite an arms race, and unless club 10s are suddenly stripped back to normal road bikes, no discs, no tri bars, etc., now people are in the position where they can buy speed, and unless you've got a fair few thousand pounds to invest, there's a ceiling, a plateau that you can hit. And I don't know about that, because for me it's still about the physical challenge and of beating my best self rather than anyone else. But there have been, we have done some comparisons wattage wise between, you know, me and someone on a standard road bike with tri bars and no discs against someone on a low pro with a disc at the back, you know, swanky top of the range aero carbon frame type thing. And in terms of output of watts and of heartbeat and similar age and similar stature, there's not that much in it, but the actual timings in the race would suggest that, you know, there's maybe 2-3 minutes over 10 miles. So does that mean if I'm looking to compete at the middle to top end of a time trial leaderboard, should I be just spending money, or should I just accept my limitations? And for me, it's not a big deal, but I can see why some people would get turned off by that. So yeah, difficult times for time trials, we would say. So Tour Down Under, Daryl Impey is the winner of the Tour Down Under, which is very very good, because he's been a super domestique for years and years and years, and he deserves his chance and his time in the funny off orange yellowy jersey type thing that they have at the Tour Down Under. Richie Port won on Wollonga Hill after a Thomas de Gendt breakaway was foiled late on. It was kind of formulaic. The bits that I did watch, it kind of wasn't on TV, then it was on Free Sports, then it disappeared for a bit, then it came back. It was on for hours and hours with not a lot happening. Anyway, I tried to surf through and get to the good bits. The interesting takeouts, I suppose, Andre Greipel sprinting really well. Peter Sagan on the medium-ish lumpy stages, pretty dominant, you'd have to say. Port winning on Wollonga Hill, Caleb Ewan winning a stage, all of the boxes were kind of checked, really. The big surprise, I suppose, being Greipel back to some level of his best that we haven't seen last year, certainly while he had his family bereavement and stuff. So, you know, great for him, great for Lotto. Did we learn a lot? Not really. I think we learned that all of the people we thought that would be competitive would be competitive. On we go now, and back to Europe, and we'll start to see how the season pans out from there. But it's been pretty fascinating so far. If not, you know, in terms of results and analysis, if not necessarily in terms of the pure quality, shall we say, of the racing. that's all for this week. Thank you again for listening. Please do share, please do tell your friends. That's number 91 in the can. We're hurtling towards the 100th. Whether we'll declare or, you know, raise our bat and declare, we'll see. But at the moment, for now, we are still working hard and pushing on the boundaries. Little bits. We're putting a few more links on the website as well. Interesting stuff that we've seen. Some Velon footage, that kind of stuff. So get along to fendrian.eu and yeah, have a look, click some of the links and see what you think. So thanks again for listening, guys, and we will be back same time next week, same place.
Speak soon. Bye-bye.